Dig It, sponsored by Shillaga Garden Centre in Glan and Plan-les-Ouates. Shillaga, let your inspiration grow.
Good morning. Today on the show, we've got Hester McDonald. We are ready for Dig It, and we are talking today all about pollinators. This, Hester, was a topic that people were requesting when we asked a few months ago.
That's right.
About what they wanted to talk about.
That's right. And we had several requests, actually, for this particular one.
We did. We've got several questions coming in. If you've got any questions, you can send them in now, studio@worldradio.ch. So get those questions sent in pronto. Why do we need to help pollinators?
So it's an interesting one. All of the pollinating insects, including bees, are under threat from lots of sources like neonicotinoids, other pesticides, herbicides, climate change, loss of habitat, loss of food sources, all, you know, jolly fun stuff. And we need them. So about 75%, amazingly, of the world's food crops are partially or wholly dependent on pollinators, including chocolate and coffee, which would just be a global disaster if we lost those.
Just remember that next time that anyone says, why do we need chocolate and coffee?
So you don't need to know anything else. And there are some more humble plants like kiwis and melons. And actually, 80% of wild plants are entirely dependent on pollinators.
That's huge, actually.
It's a lot, isn't it? Yeah.
That's an awful lot of things that we would stand to
lose
and that are under genuine threat at the moment. So how can we help?
So I'd say if we look at a sort of a 3-point approach, the first is to provide food sources of nectar, pollen and preferred leaves for their offspring. Because obviously if you're a butterfly and you lay eggs, which then turn into cute little caterpillars, they need to eat something and they usually have a preferred thing that they like to eat. So that's the first thing, food. Second one is really, it's very simple. Stop using pesticides and herbicides. Just stop. Just stop. It's really easy. We did it years ago and just stopped. And mysteriously, our garden hasn't fallen into a big black hole.
Oh, right.
Funnily enough, no. And the third thing is to provide them with homes. So make insect hotels and bee houses and make your garden more accommodating to let these animals and make them happier and make them stay.
I've noticed that there are a lot more little bee houses cropping up in different communes.
Yeah.
There's quite a lot of, I think, village or commune-sponsored bee houses.
I think that's a great thing.
And it's lovely. Does it really make a difference if we've got a tiny little bee house? I've got a tiny little bee house. A friend of mine made it for me and delivered it with a couple of little bees in it already.
Oh, that's so
because
cute.
He made it from his own.
Yeah.
And so a few bees that had then gone into his bee house in a little tube, a little bamboo tube.
So one of their big threats is habitat loss. And if you can make your garden or even your balcony a little bit of habitat for them, it does help. Every little helps. Just because it's a drop doesn't mean it can't all combine to make an ocean.
I love that. So where do we actually start?
So I would say, as this is a gardening show, as this is a gardens and plants show, why don't we start by looking at plants? And I would say if you don't have much space or you are really a container gardener, try to choose plants that will be happy in containers, or look at the periods of the year when there's not much else going on. So really the periods of the year when the bees and other pollinators are most short of food sources is kind of the November to February period, when there's not a lot going on out in the garden, but we as gardeners can provide really, really helpful food sources.
Aren't they all hibernating over that time?
No, astonishingly, quite a lot of bees, particularly wild bees, are still well active into November. As if it's warm at all, they're much less sensitive to temperature changes than hive bees, than you know, farmed, effectively, bees.
Wow. And
even on warm days, you'll see them kind of coming out of hives and wandering about a bit and going back in again.
So let's make it easy for
them.
Exactly. What are some of those really good plants?
So I would look at things like winter clematis or honeysuckles, which are climbers. Hellebores are absolutely brilliant, which are our Christmas roses. And we absolutely love these. They're great for containers. They are tough as old boots. And if you've got space in the garden, once they've finished flowering, stuff them out into the garden, and, you know, under a tree, anywhere sort of semi-shady or shady, and they will be happy as happy. And if you're lucky, they start making babies.
This year, I remember people were a little bit worried. I saw some bees coming out of my little bee house very early, and we were worried about it being quite warm earlier in the year, and then we were worried about it maybe being frosty.
They just go back into their bee house. They're quite clever.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do we help them? That's in around spring, though.
So I would also look at spring bulbs. Spring bulbs are brilliant. They're packed full of pollen, the loads of nectar in them. So things like snowdrops, crocuses, daffodils, tulips, and then later on into the alliums. They absolutely love alliums. If you've ever grown them, these big lollipop purple balls on sticks. They are fantastic. They come from bulbs. The bulbs are quite expensive, so do mark them, because otherwise you will dig one up and split it in half and then you will cry from personal experience.
Oh, are we telling a personal
story?
We
are telling a personal story. You will split it in half and think, that was 15 francs. I am very sad.
Stay with us, Hester. We'll be talking about pollinators. In fact, we also got a great prize this morning from Shilliger Garden Centre, and we are going to be giving away a climbing rose with a lovely archway. It's got a metal archway there. So I think we need a bit of space for that, but I think it's very fitting. So we've got a lovely climbing rose to give away. Stay tuned. I'll tell you how you can get into that draw. We're talking today about bees and pollinators. Hester is here to explain what we can do to encourage them into our gardens and help them to thrive. We also have a great prize today, courtesy of Shilliger Garden Centre. What have we got to give away, Hester?
We've got a climbing rose with a metallic support.
I loved it. That's really
so actually, it does mean that you can put it on a balcony. It doesn't have to go in the garden.
A whole archway.
Yeah, very nice.
It's fancy.
I quite fancy that, but apparently I'm not allowed to apply for the prize.
You are not allowed to enter this. The question that we are going to ask you today is, can you name another pollinator that's not a bee?
Ooh, good question.
That's it. We're obviously going to give you lots of clues and outright tell you what some of those are over the next 45 minutes. So stay with us. But there we go. All you need to do to get into the draw to win that climbing rose and that archway is simply just tell us another pollinator, not a bee. 939 on the text. Okay. Start your message off with WRS. Email studio@worldradio.ch. Hester, you were talking earlier about some of the great
plants that you
spring
can put
plants.
In. So we were talking about winter and spring flowering plants, which really are the things you should be concentrating on and are easy to put in, even if you've got a small space or a balcony, because it includes things like spring bulbs. If you've got a bit more space, then obviously things like, you know, flowering cherries and apples and things like that. But you do need quite a bit of space to be able to have them in. However, if you really are a bit stuck for space, summer flowering bulbs, things like dahlias, do really well in pots and bees love them, as do things like, you know, sunflowers and zinnias and all sorts of other things.
So do I take from this that the way to go is essentially they just need flowers?
They do, but if they're super, super, super double and they've bred to have no nectar in them or no pollen because they don't want them to breed, then it's no use to be. So the idea is really if you can see the middle of the flower and it's a fairly simple flower, as in it's not super, 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 super ruffled, then it's probably pretty good for bees. If you can see the middle of it and see the, you know, the stamens and things, the little pokey bits, then there's going to be pollen in there that they could eat, and there should be nectar too.
Are there any other things that are useful for them, like grasses?
Yeah, so they like to nest, and they like to hide, and they like to sit around in long grasses. So if you leave a section of your grass long, so if you've already done no-mow May and you think, actually, I don't want to cut this grass, it looks really pretty, leave it. Just leave it.
I love no-mow May.
No-mow May.
I've never heard of that.
No-mow May, it came from an experiment in the US, which was repeated in the UK, which was just some ordinary family gardens decided not to mow in May and counted the number of new wildflowers that came up and how quickly. And basically, you can have an enormous impact on the biodiversity of a garden by not mowing in May.
I'm doing no-mow
in sections till September, when we'll cut it and we'll leave it and then we'll rake it off.
You mentioned earlier about stopping the use of pesticides being quite an easy thing to do. Just don't do
just
the
don't
thing.
Do it.
And there's actually been some trials in Nyon, I believe.
Yeah, so there's an international rose trial in Nyon, and if you want to come and see it, the rose garden's now open from 7 in the morning till 5 o'clock at night. And in fact, there's two open days, one this Friday and one this Saturday, and it's completely no spray, no treatment, no spray, nothing, nothing. And roses have a bit of a reputation of being difficult or fussy. And I have to say, you come and see this trial, your mind will be changed.
Really?
They are
unbelievably
healthy.
What is the International Rose Trial?
So effectively, the breeders, worldwide breeders, send the trial every year up to four of either climbers, landscape, miniatures, hybrid teas or floribundas. And they go in the ground in neon with a special code on it, which means that the people who are judging them as a permanent jury who judges them don't know who they are.
Right.
So it's just, you know, hybrid tea four.
It really is a blind test.
It's a completely blind test. And they're fed exactly the same. They're watered exactly the same. And then there's a really nice direct comparison to say, oh, well, you know, hybrid tea four is looking incredible. Fortunately, hybrid tea seven's a bit rubbish. And
so,
that's it.
So why did we even use pesticides if they're really completely unnecessary?
So I think that there's a pesticide industry who'd like to sell us some. It's part
marketing.
Marketing. there was a real belief, particularly in the kind of the 50s to the 70s, that this was modern. This was the thing to do. And people who previously had grown their plants with no help besides, you know, a bit of poo and some water were doing absolutely fine and were convinced that this was the thing to do. And there are some plants that really do need a bit of help. Well, don't grow them then. Grow something else, or grow a resistant variety, which is what this rose trial is demonstrating ably. That yes, okay, if you've got a rose that's covered in black spot, I would say stop spraying it and see what happens. Maybe feed it. That would probably help. So the idea is also that you feed the plant, you make sure that its environment is well managed. You prune it right so there's proper air circulation around the plant, and you look after it. You know, you don't stress it by watering regularly, for example.
But what about aphids?
What about get some ladybirds?
Is that it?
Yeah, buy yourself some ladybirds.
That's
and then make sure
solution.
You've got an insect house for them to overwinter in the winter, and they'll come back.
What about herbicides or fungicides?
So I would avoid, if you can. I mean, there's lots of fungicides that are permitted in organic growth. And in fact, if you look on the back, if you really look into what's permitted under organic growing conditions, there's quite a lot that's permitted. If you can avoid using them, avoid using them. Wait and see. On the whole, most things, you'll get to a nice equilibrium. It might take a couple of years. Most things will balance themselves out. So if you've got a lot of pests, so I have quite a lot of caterpillars on one of my apple trees, and the blue tits after one or two years suddenly realise this is just a brilliant place, and I have a blue tit nest that I've got a couple of breeding pairs in the garden, and now they just go straight to the apple trees and eat the caterpillars.
What we're saying is nature will always win.
It should do. Just leave it alone.
That's great. Less interference. Okay. In a minute coming up, we'll just be talking about insect houses and hotels, what you can build yourself. Let us know, though, another pollinator, just not a bee, and any other pollinator, name one, send it in. You'll go into the draw for that climbing rose and decorative archway courtesy of Shilliger Garden Centre. I should mention now as well that Shilliger Garden Centre have got 30% off.
Ooh.
Everything.
Ooh.
It's essentially everything. Or I should say all participating products. But it's so much of their store. They got 30% off a load of their summer products. It's this Saturday and this Saturday only. So
go early.
Go early.
I would say.
It's going to be busy. It is. So that's this Saturday. It's the 25th of June. Put that in the diary. Let's make a bee house or a hotel. Hester, don't bees just live in hives?
No, not really. And actually, the vast majority of bees don't live in hives. Lots of them live in the ground. Some of them live in sort of little nests, really cute little nests that they make for themselves, like a bird's nest, but it's kind of circular, like a mouse nest. Some of them live in little tubes or little houses. So if you get a brick and stuff a load of straw into it, you might well find some bees living in there, which is really cool.
Do they all just live quite socially, though? That's the thing.
No, most of them, a lot of them are solitary.
Right, but they'll be happy to live in a single brick, multiple of them.
Yeah, as long as they've got a little tube each. As far as they're concerned, that's independent living. It's like living in an apartment.
That's their apartment.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. And they're very, very easy to make. I mean, if you look online, look with the RHS or look for any of the kind of pro bee sites, anything, you'll find recipes and ways to put together a bee house. Basically, a bundle of sticks or straws, preferably with a little hole in the middle of them. Put them in a bundle. You can put them in a tin can. You can put them in a bottle. You can literally just bundle them together and stuff them in a hedge, hang them in a tree, put them against a shed, and you already have the start of a bee house.
So what about trying to put something that will encourage them over to your little bee house. Yeah. When my friend gave me a little bee hotel.
Did it come with a bee in it?
It came with a couple of bees in the tubes. But also, he'd put some kind of material in the tube, which he said...
Some food.
That would attract them.
There's a Swiss company called Wildbiene und Partner. We'll put the link on the website. And they provide you with wild bee houses, and usually with a starter kit of a couple of bees in it, like your friend did for
Great.
You.
Yeah.
And they're suitable for putting on balconies, on apartments, on houses, which I find extraordinary. I think it's absolutely brilliant. And there's actually a slight issue in that a lot of the newly put in hives in cities, this kind of re-being, of cities, is actually putting wild bee populations under pressure. Because if there's a loss of habitat and you're then introducing bees into a new area where there weren't previously, or hive bees into a new area where previously they were just wild bees are outcompeted by the hive bees.
Are there any good websites that you would recommend, or even books?
Yes, there's a new book called The Ultimate Flower Gardener's Guide by Jenny Rose Carey. Now, she's an extremely experienced landscape gardener. She runs an enormous garden of her own, and she's been the head, she's been the director of a couple of big public gardens in America, so she really knows what she's talking about. It's published by Timber Press, and it's a really good guide to choosing plants for your garden with a focus on flowers, which of course is what we've been talking about today. The first chapter is all about flower shape, which is really useful for bees, so that they like flat ones. Other pollinators really like flat daisy-like ones, tubular ones, ball-shaped ones, anything that they can then access the nectar into. It's very interesting. Interestingly, I know you don't like purple very much.
True.
No, bees really do. They like deep blues and purples most strongly. And it's a brief guide to introducing that colour and all sorts of other colours and how they might perceive them using different plants. And then the next chapter is a season by season guide to flowers. So if you're not sure about choosing flowers to provide, say, pollinator friendly pickings, then it's a very useful thing for early spring and winter in particular. And the extended index of plants is really excellent. I have to say, her decades of experience running all these big gardens, as well as her educational background, because she's an adjunct professor of landscape architecture, makes her a very readable and accessible book. It's really excellent. Very, very, very useful. And it's called The Ultimate Flower Gardener's Guide from Timber Press.
Good websites.
So I really like freethebees.ch. It's a citizen science website that brings together people who are interested in helping bees and the scientists who are interested in bees to map wild bee populations. In Switzerland, you can volunteer and get trained to find wild bees and map them. So that's freethebees.ch.
We will put that website on our website as well with this podcast a little later on today. We got some questions. Are you ready to answer some listener questions?
Okay,
Hester,
go for it.
First one, this is from Bev, says, I'm interested in helping bees in my garden, but...
Here's the but.
I live at an altitude of 850 metres. Is it worth it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I have to say, if you go to any alpine meadow and sit quietly, just for 5 minutes, you'll see how much insect activity there is.
Is there a certain altitude at which it's not worth it?
No, I mean, they found bees flying in the Himalayas. So... I'm pretty sure they can manage 850.
Do it wherever.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd look at things that are easy. So sowing clover is a really great way to support bee populations and other pollinator populations in your garden. Things like sedums, which will also be very happy under layers of snow in the winter. That's really not a problem at all. Or you can grow any of the annuals like zinnias and sunflowers and things like that, which they also love, which will flower in the summer. And then you can either put them in your garage or throw them away.
Bev, do it. It's totally worth it. I've got another question coming from Jill, who says, I've been away for all of May. I haven't mowed my lawn. Basically, she's involuntarily done no mow May. Can I just leave it for wildlife? When should I cut it? Now that she hasn't cut it for May, is there a chance that there are things nesting in it?
Well, hopefully there might be. I would say decide where you need to get to across your lawn. So if your compost bin is on the far side of your garden, you probably want to mow a little path to get to that. I would say be really careful when you do your first cut. You don't take off more than a third of the grass's length at once, because you could kill it. So just do a very gentle cut reduction and leave it fairly long, I would say. You know, don't razor cut it, because it's looking like we're going to have a very hot summer, and the longer grass is, the better it's able to cope with drought, because it captures more dew at night.
Interesting. Okay, so Jill, I mean, you can leave it. The question is, she literally says, can I leave it?
You absolutely can. Yes. So, and even if it's just a section of it, and then you can cut it in September.
Dave has got a question. I'm not sure if this is bee related, but maybe you can refer back to bees. But we haven't planted our summer pots yet. Is there anything left in the shops, or should we just leave it until the autumn?
That's a really good question.
Do we even bother?
Yeah, Dave, get yourself a rose, mate.
Get into the competition. Lots of people are actually for the climbing rose that we've got to give away with the decorative archway. Loads of you are entering our competition. Dave, the answer is just simply yes. Let's talk about our competition before we go into the news at the bottom of the hour. Just quickly, we're asking you about other pollinators, not bees. That's all we're asking for to get into this competition for the Rose Archway from Shillinger Garden Centre. Name another pollinator. We've got moths, we've got butterflies, we've got hummingbirds, we've got wasps and bees. Bats as
They're
well.
They're all really good.
All amongst the suggestions that have come in on the text and the email. You can keep your answers coming in. Name any other pollinator that's not a bee. It's just too obvious.
Dig It, sponsored by Shillinger Garden Centre in Glon and Plan-les-Ouates. Shillinger, let your inspiration grow.
Hester, what is the plant of the month?
See, I had a lot of plants to choose from this month that are good for pollinators, but I decided, actually, why don't we provide some food for caterpillars? Because we like butterflies.
Go on, then.
So I thought a nasturtium.
A nasturtium, what does that look like?
A nasturtium, they've got sort of flattish, almost round leaves, and they have very pretty red, orange, pink flowers that are edible. And the flowers and the leaves are edible. They're quite peppery. They taste a bit like radishes.
Right.
They're delicious, actually. I could quite see why they like eating them. And so you should hopefully find some large whites and small whites laying their eggs on them and eating them. And the nasturtiums are incredibly productive. Incredibly productive. And so don't worry if you need to share your leaves with some caterpillars.
Just to check, and this may be a silly question, but I am prepared to ask it and make a fool of myself. Caterpillars themselves, do they do any pollinating, or is it just when they become butterflies?
I think they probably do some accidental pollinating, walking around
just
between
flowers.
On their
little feet.
On their little feet, yeah.
On their little
I mean, because some
feet.
Bee pollination is actually from their tummies and their feet, not from their mouths. So, yes, they
Great.
Probably do.
Also, in terms of other things that might happen to pollinate, we've got a comment that's come in, because we're asking today, name something that pollinates that's not a bumblebee.
Mm.
And that's to go into the draw for the Rose Archway from Shillinger Garden Centre. I've got a comment from Mina, who said, I was amazed to learn that elephants are important and scientifically recognised pollinators as they stomp about spreading pollen.
Yes, I bet they
who
are.
Knew?
I bet they are. Lots of things are. I mean, bats are.
Bats are. We've had lots of people that have said bats as well. And beetles, moths, flies. Thanks so much to everyone. I haven't had a chance to go through all of your comments, but essentially...
Elephants are cool, though. I like the idea that, you know, poking their trunks into flowers.
Just then going to another flower and poking.
They're very small elephants.
Just tiny miniature versions. Talk to me, Hester. Have we got any events that you would recommend?
Yeah, there's a couple.
Besides
the open day, so the Concours de la Rose Nouvelle de Nyon, which is the International Rose Trial in Nyon, have their open days on this coming Friday and this coming Saturday. You can go to our website, which is rosenouvelledenyon.ch, which we'll have on the website. And
we
you
will.
Can go and click and find that. But they're also open from 7 o'clock till 5 o'clock every day, Monday to Friday till October. So you can go and have a look anytime, but this weekend would be a good time. Botanica is on the 11th of June to the 10th. July, which used to be Botanica Week, which brings together all of the botanical gardens in Switzerland. It's now Botanica Month, which is a much better idea, because I could never quite get round in 1 week, and now a month's a much better idea. And it really is fantastic. There's loads of great talks, there's lots of great tours, and there's lots in English as well. So look on botanica.ch, which will also be on the site. And the last one is the Fête de la Dahlia, the Dahlia Festival in Morges, which takes over from the Tulip Festival. Morges has got loads going on. It's a very pretty little town on the lake, and they have in the same park where they have the Tulip Festival, they have it is full of dahlias. It is absolutely wonderful from mid-July to October. And actually, I was there a couple of weeks ago and they're all in already. It looks phenomenal.
In terms of events, I'll also just say that a one-day only sale is happening at Shillinger Garden Centre. This is actually in-store and on the online shop, 30% off all products in-store and the online shop. I'll say that again, 30% off all products in-store and the online shop.
Fill your boots.
Terms and conditions apply. Oh. But it's incredible. So if you're looking for plants, if you're looking for soil, furniture, decoration, barbecues,
new grill.
Then grab it at Shillagas Garden Centre this Saturday. This Saturday only. This is a one-day thing that's going on. Hester, it's been wonderful talking with you about bees and other pollinators for our June show of Dig It. We'll put this as a podcast up on the website worldradio.ch/Dig It. Hester, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Dig It, sponsored by Shillagas Garden Centre in Glan and Plan-les-Ouates. Shillagas, let your inspiration grow.